The following shiur is presented by Dayan Shlomo Cohen, Dayan in Beit Din Ahavat Shalom in Yerushalayim, and author of Pure Money.
For more shiurim or information, please visit theshc.org or call 1-844-200-PSHC. That's 1-844-200-8742.
Parshat Toldot. In this week's parsha, we see the story of Esav, who sold his portion as the firstborn to Yaakov because he was hungry. For a bowl of lentils, he sold the firstborn, the rights of the firstborn, the property of the firstborn. Esav came home from hunting. He was very hungry, and he saw Yaakov was cooking, and he wanted to eat from it. Yaakov said, "If you're prepared to sell me the rights of the firstborn, the inheritance of the firstborn in Jewish law receives a double portion of all the property of his father. If you're prepared to sell me your portion, then I'll give you something to eat." And Esav agreed. At the time, he said, "What do I care about this firstborn portion? If at the moment I'm hungry, I only care about the moment. I don't care about the future right now." The question is that in Jewish law, in Jewish monetary law, we find a machloket in the Gemara in Masechet Baba Metzia about whether someone can sell a davar shelo bo leolam, whether you can sell something that doesn't exist yet. And that's even if it's going to come and exist in the future. If right now it doesn't exist, can you sell it? Rabbi Akiva says, yes, you can. While the Chachamim argue and say, no, it's not possible to buy something that doesn't yet exist. There's Chakira. Why? Why can't you buy something that doesn't exist? Is it because there's a problem of what's called gemirut dat, the problem of you, every change of ownership, every acquisition has to have intention. It has to have positive intention to do it. And if that's lacking, then there can be no kinyan. There can be no change of ownership. So it could be, on the one hand, that the problem of buying something that doesn't exist is because, seeing as you can't see it, and maybe it won't actually come to fruition ever anyway. So that's the problem. It's a problem of gemirut dat. The actual process of acquiring it could be done, even though it doesn't exist. But there's a problem with what's called this gemirut dat, this intention to buy it. That's one side to the question. On the other side, on the other side of the Chakira, is that no, maybe there's no, the problem is that it's just not possible to buy something that doesn't exist. Because there's no kinyan that can help you to acquire it. Because a kinyan can't work on something that doesn't exist. We'll leave that for the moment, we won't get into that. But the halakha here is like the Chachamim. That no, paskins the Shulchan Aruch, you cannot buy something that doesn't exist. If so, asks the Rivash, how did Yaakov buy the firstborn portion from Esav? Because it doesn't exist right now. He does not have it. In the future, he'll probably have it. But it doesn't exist right now. It's not in his possession right now. How can he sell it? Something that's what's called a davar shelo bo leolam doesn't necessarily just mean that it doesn't exist. It also means it's not in the possession of the person that's trying to transfer its ownership to you. So asks the Rivash a very, very poignant question. How can it be that we find in this sale of the first portion of the firstborn, when it's something that halachically is not possible? The Rivash answers the question that here we're talking about before Matan Torah. The story of Yaakov and Esav took place before the Torah was given. And before the Torah was given, it was possible to buy something that wasn't yet in existence. That's an answer that needs to be thought about a little bit. Because if it's like we just said before, that the reason why you can't buy something is either because of gemirut dat, that you don't have proper intention because you can't see it, or because it's just not possible for a Kenyan to work on such an object where it doesn't exist. So what difference does it make whether the Torah was given or wasn't given? It shouldn't be dependent on that. Maybe the way to understand it is that there was such a custom amongst people at that time that they were buying and selling things that weren't in existence. That's what we call a kinyan situmta. There was a custom to buy and sell things that weren't in existence. Maybe we'll get back to this in a little while and go into it in a bit more depth. The Ketzot HaChoshen also asks this question. He brings the Rivash, and he has a different answer. He answers that what happened between Esav and Yaakov was not an acquisition, but it was what's called a siluk. That means that Yaakov didn't acquire Esav's portion, but Esav moved himself away from his portion. He retracted his ownership on his portion, leaving his portion ownerless. That, says the Ketzot HaChoshen, you can do on something that doesn't yet exist, that you haven't yet acquired. You can remove yourself so that you won't acquire it when it comes into an existence. That is possible, said the Ketzot HaChoshen, and that is an acceptable answer, and that's the only way, says the Ketzot, that we can understand what happened in the selling of the portion of the firstborn. Because the answer of the Rivash, that says the Ketzot, is not really acceptable, maybe for the reasons that we mentioned. But let's examine a bit closer what the Rivash himself wanted to say. That before Matan Torah, there wasn't a problem of buying and selling a davar shelo bo le'olam. We have in halacha what's called a kinyan situmta. A kinyan situmta, says the Gemara Masechet Baba Metzia, is a custom amongst businessmen. A custom amongst them to acquire something in a particular way. Says the Gemara, it used to be that they would be, if I, an importer of barrels of wine would have them left on the harbour by his warehouse, and I would make a verbal deal with the owner, the shipper that I want to buy them, and then we would go down there and he would write on the barrels my name. By writing on my name on the barrels, the acquisition was now complete, and I have now a debt to pay the price of those barrels. There was the verbal agreement, which is not a change of ownership. It's a moral obligation for everyone to stand by their word, but it's not an actual transfer of ownership. After that verbal agreement, you need a kinyan. You need an act of acquisition, paying of money, taking possession of the goods, something like that in order to seal the acquisition. But what would they do? They would go down to the harbour and write the names of the buyers on the barrels, and that would be considered as a change of ownership. If the barrel were now to be destroyed by a bolt of lightning, it would be the loss of the buyer. He would have to still pay for these barrels. He now has a debt to pay for the barrels. They're now his. Okay? That is what's called a kinyan situmta, because it says nowhere in the Torah that you can buy barrels by writing your name on them. But seeing as the custom amongst businessmen was that's the way you buy barrels, so the Torah recognizes it, and it works according to the Torah, because it's the custom amongst the business people to do their dealings in this particular way. In my opinion, this proves that the reason why you can't buy something that doesn't exist is because of Gemirut Dat, and not because a Kenyan is not possible on it. Because if it's a fact that a kinyan is not possible, then what difference does it make whether the custom is to buy it or not to buy it? It's not going to help if there's a custom to buy it. But if the problem is a problem of gemirut daat, then if the custom amongst people is to buy it, then they do have gemirut daat. You feel as if the thing is here, and a kinyan would work, and that you could buy a davar shel obol olam in such a situation. Let's take an example of a kinyan situmta in our times. If any of you have been to the diamond exchange, especially the diamond exchange in Antwerp, there, to this day, when two dealers are closing a deal, they sit together at a table and they put out their wares, they show each other their diamonds, the buyer, they agree on prices, and then they say to each other, Mazal u bracha. Mazal u bracha. With those holy words of Mazal and Bracha, the deal is finished. No diamond dealer will ever go back on his word after he said Mazal u bracha. That's the end of the acquisition. But hang on, according to the Torah, it's not the end of an acquisition. Words are not an acquisition. Words are a moral obligation, but they're not an acquisition. If the diamonds were to be stolen now or destroyed in some way, it would be the loss of the buyer. How can it be? There hasn't been a transfer of ownership yet. There's no such thing in Torah law as an act of acquisition verbally. But nevertheless, if two diamond dealers were to come to Beit Din and one of them wanted to go back on his word after saying Mazal u Bracha, Beit Din would force him to stand by his word. They would say that there's already been a transfer of ownership. You can't go back on it now. Whereas if one guy that was verbally agreed to sell his car to someone else decided to go back on his word, even though before he received the money or before the car was taken away, Beit Din couldn't prevent him from doing so, because it's only a moral obligation to stand by your word. I say only a moral obligation is very important. So we see that something that is a custom amongst people in the business world is accepted by the Torah and honored by Beit Din as being a valid way of transferring ownership. But does that mean now that if I were to say, if two diamond work exchange guys wanted to sell a davar shelo bo leolam, they wanted to sell the next year's fruits from their orchard, they wanted to sell them to each other, but they could just say mazal and bracha and it would work? No. How can this kinyan situmta be stronger than an actual kinyan from the Torah, like mashicha or money, like taking possession? How can it be stronger than that? It's a darabanan type of kinyan. It's a rabbinical kinyan. How can it work better than a kinyan from the Torah? The Chatam Sofer writes about this, and he agrees that that can't be. That says the Chatam Sofer. What happens if the custom is to buy things that don't exist? The custom is to buy a davar shelo bo leolam. In the marketplace, people are going around and buying the fruits of next year. People are buying the crops of next year, and the year after, and the year after that. And the iron that's going to be produced in the next few years, people are buying that now. If the custom is that everyone's doing that, then there's no problem, and you can buy something that doesn't exist. To buy something that doesn't exist using a derabanan kinyan doesn't make sense that you could do it. But where the custom is to buy things that don't exist, then everyone would agree that you can do that, says the Chatam Sofer. The Petrei Tshuva brings him down in Siman Resh Tet. So in our times, for example, where there's such a well-developed futures market, that open up the financial papers and see the prices of wheat for next year and the year after and the year after that, and people are buying and selling it all the time. So does that mean that it's not valid according to the Torah? No. The Torah, any two dealers in the futures market who were to come to Beit Din, because one of them wanted to go back on his word, claiming that it was something that I bought from you, something that doesn't yet exist. Beit Din would tell him you're wrong, you did buy it. Beit Din will honor this transaction, because the custom is to buy and sell these things. What about copyrights and trade names? These are abstract things. According to the halakha, you can't buy and sell things that are abstract. You can't buy and sell something that doesn't actually exist. For example, a trade name or the copyright to something. The copyright to a song. How can you have that? It's not something that you can own. It's something that has no substance to it, says the Gemara. The answer is that seeing as today it's a well-accepted custom that we do buy and sell such products, we do buy and sell trade names, and we do buy and sell copyrights, that the Torah honors it and accepts it as a situmta. It's become the custom amongst people. That's a very, very important point that we see how the Torah deals with the futures market. There's another interesting piece of Gemara here talking about a davar shelo bo leolam, which is, I think, very, very poignant and very important to say here. The Gemara, Masechet Baba Metzia, asks, according to the opinion that we said, that we paskin like, that you cannot buy a davar shelo bo leolam. So let's say that I bought from you the fruits of next year from your orchard. And the fruits, so actually our transaction is invalid. The fruits then came out, and I came into your field, and I grabbed them, and I took them, and I collected them. Do we now take them away from me? Because there was never any actual acquisition, or not? The answer is that we don't take them away from you. And so, Paskas the Shulchan Aruch as well. Why? Because we presume that the seller, even though this actual sale is not valid, the seller wants to keep his word. Seeing as he's given his word, we presume that as a nice Jewish boy, an upstanding Jew, he wants to keep his word. Therefore, the halacha is that the buyer, no one can take them away from him. Even the seller himself can't take them away, because we presume that when this guy took them, he agreed. Because it's an underlying presumption that every Jew would want to keep his word. Tov shem ishemin tov, we're told by our sages. A good name is the most important thing that there is. Honoring your word in any situation. It's worth a lot. It's worth a lot more than shemin tov. Bezat Hashem, that we should all do our business dealings honorably, and do a Kiddush Hashem in the way that we're doing our business in the world. Thank you very much.
This audio series has been brought to you by the Sephardic Halakha Center. The center is committed to advancing research and application of Halakha in the Sephardic community nationwide. For a Halakhic consultation, monetary Beit Din services, to order this series or to sign up to receive the Sephardic Halakha Journal, or for all other information, please call 1-844-200-TSHC or email info@theshc.org to subscribe.